This is Her Hilltop High. I'm Katie Zolkowski. Ahead of Syracuse University's 150th anniversary, 88.3 WAER is taking a look at the university's history. America's history, as well as Syracuse University's history, starts to get busy as we begin the 1940s. SU students are making their mark on academics and athletics, like Wilmuth Sadat Singh. Sadat Singh was the first African-American quarterback for Syracuse University, but he was originally at the school on a basketball scholarship. He only started playing football after the school's assistant football coach saw Sadat Singh playing an intramural game. He would continue to play basketball and finish his senior year with an undefeated season. After his time at SU, Sadat Singh became part of the All-African American Air Force Unit, the Tuskegee Airmen, during World War II. After the attacks on Pearl Harbor, the United States took on a larger role in World War II.
And representatives, I have the distinguished honor of presenting the President of the United States.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate, of the House of Representatives, yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
Our West Coast became a potential combat zone. Living in that zone were more than 100,000 persons of Japanese ancestry, two-thirds of them American citizens, one-third aliens. We knew that some among them were potentially dangerous, but no one knew what would happen among this concentrated population if Japanese forces should try to invade our shores. Military authorities therefore determined that all of them, citizens and aliens alike, would have to move. This picture tells how the mass migration was accomplished.
This mass migration was accomplished through forced relocation into internment camps in the western United States, isolated incarceration centers run by the U.S. government throughout World War II. As the U.S. government sends people to these internment camps, Syracuse University Chancellor William Tolley admits nearly 100 Japanese-American students, giving them a way out of the camps.
I don't know off the top of my head, but there was a program. It may have been through the Methodist Church or something like that. A program to get Japanese American students in internment camps admitted to colleges and universities. And I believe a lot of colleges and universities said no, but Tolley said yes.
Meg Mason, Syracuse University archivist.
And he was like, how many can you give us? And what's strange is that we don't have a lot of documentation in the archives. Chancellor Tolley talks about it in his memoirs. And he actually, in the memoirs, asked the Daily Orange to keep quiet about it because he knew he'd get a lot of blowback. And he did, I think, from a couple of Board of Trustee members or various members of the community, I think, were appalled. But he stood by his decision. And there is a letter in the archives from a alumnus who was Japanese American, who years later, I think it's from the 1980s, thanks to Chancellor Tolley, thanking him. It's something that we don't have a lot of material on, but we know that happened.
Received this afternoon a message from the Japanese government in reply to the message forwarded to that government by the Secretary of State on August 11th. I deem this reply a full acceptance of the Potsdam Declaration, which specifies the unconditional surrender of Japan. In the reply, there is no qualification. Arrangements are now being made for the formal signing of the surrender terms at the earliest possible moment.
With World War II ending, many soldiers were returning home, having sacrificed education to fight for the United States.
Even before the close of World War II, President Roosevelt was concerned about what the 16 million servicemen would face when they returned home. The original GI Bill, signed into law on June 22, 1944, has been called one of the most significant pieces of legislation ever passed by Congress. The results transformed the United States socially and economically.
Syracuse University accepted approximately 7,000 veterans under the GI Bill. This doubled their enrollment, which meant adding more academic programs and faculty members. In 1947, Syracuse University is granted its first radio license, one of the first in the region.
WAER wasn't WAER at the beginning when it signed on the air April 13, 1947.
This is station WJIV at Syracuse University.
Post-World War II, amid a brief fascination with jive music, students named their new radio station WJIV. But that wasn't really the beginning either.
Jen Bartlett knew someone at GE, talked with them, and the result was that they gave us a transmitter.
General Electric outfitted the school with a small FM transmitter, just 2.5 watts in power. It was a test marketing plan by the company. GE wanted the transmitter and radio station to succeed so the company could sell similar equipment to other schools nationwide. The FCC gave its approval. So did the university. GE charged Syracuse a few $1,000s to erect a tower that would have otherwise cost $100,000. April 13th, this was the sound.
This is station WJIV at Syracuse University in Syracuse, New York. Signing on for a regular program schedule.
This station will get its permanent license in 1951 and go on to train broadcasters like Bob Costas, Mike Tirico, Beth Mowins, Ted Koppel, and Lakshmi Singh. It's during this time that the Syracuse legend of 44 begins.
This is Jim Brown to the 25, over the 30, 35.
Jim Brown was the first in a line of greats to wear the number 44. While at Syracuse, Brown broke multiple school records and was voted All-American his senior year. His team went to the Cotton Bowl in 1957, but was narrowly defeated by TCU. But a few years later, Syracuse would have another chance at the national championship with another 44.
Pigskin Hip Parade, Syracuse meeting a tri-champion of the Southwest, University of Texas in Cotton Bowl in Dallas. Syracuse Lightning struck fast in the Cotton Bowl, as you'll see, but now it's one for the money. Bobby Lackey of Texas has kicked off. Keep an eye on this runner back. Number 44, Ernie Davis, back to the Syracuse 26. Two for the show. Doak is that eager defender. Art Baker, the Syracuse...
SU won that championship in 1959 after an undefeated season under coach Ben Schwartzwalder. And Ernie Davis went on to become the first ever black man to win the Heisman Trophy.
Ernie Davis of Syracuse, the fleet Syracuse halfback, is voted the Heisman Trophy as the outstanding college football player of the year. The 21-year-old whiz kid is as hard to stop as a 10-ton truck. Watch that number 44. Over for the touchdown, the kind of playing that sparked the Syracuse offensive. Ernie hopes to play 8 or 10 years of professional football and then pursue a business career.
By the mid-60s, Newhouse 1 was completed. The building was designed by architect I.M. Pei, and it was dedicated on August 5, 1964. President Lyndon B. Johnson was set to be the keynote speaker at the event.
On August 2nd, the United States destroyer Maddox was attacked on the high seas in the Gulf of Tonkin by hostile vessels of the government of North Vietnam. On August 4th, that attack was repeated in those same waters against two United States destroyers. The attacks were deliberate. The attacks were unprovoked. The attacks have been answered.
It was here, on Syracuse University's campus, that President Johnson delivered the Gulf of Tonkin speech, escalating the profile of the Vietnam War and the country's fight against communism in Southeast Asia. Next time on Her Hilltop High, we'll hear stories of the last great Syracuse football player to wear the number 44 and the establishment of SU's African American Studies program. Portions of sound in this episode come from Syracuse Orange Athletics, the United States government, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, and the Miller Center. For Her Hilltop High, from 88.3 WAER, I'm Katie Sokoski.